Hello and welcome to another episode of the Daily Remedy podcast. Today we're here with Mrs. Smriti Prabhunandan, a passionate healthcare strategist. She's affectionately known as Simi, an experienced healthcare strategist with more than 14 years of work at the intersection of healthcare, technology, and innovation. She's a board member of the World Food Bank, where she focuses on equity and equality in the space of nutritious foods and making an impact to improve public health by eradicating hunger and improving food policy. Additionally, she is executive producer of the Health Forward podcast and contributor to MedCity News. And with that, I'd like to welcome Simi. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jay, so much. Grateful for you to share the space with me.
Of course. And let's get right to it. So many speak of health innovation, but you're actually doing it. Take us through a typical day or typical week for you. What are some of the highlights of your work? And what are some of the things you could do without, so to speak?
Great question. So my role at Tara Consultancy Services right now is within our go-to-market healthcare team globally. We work across all payers and providers and distributors as well. And I work closely at the intersection of innovation, empathy, and transformation. And our daily work is to think about what challenges our healthcare workforce faces and how do we solve it by using technology as a tool. So this involves improving customer experience by either working through a design thinking approach, creating a business model that addresses all touch points of a patient to deliver seamless care. But another example is there's so much data out there which is structured and unstructured. How do we integrate and provide actionable insights so we can make decision-making accurate and provide care that is of high quality and cost appropriate? And we also have some products such as the health analytics that does exactly that. Last but not the least, cybersecurity and resilience is a significant issue given the pandemic, where we are heavily relying on telehealth and we're able to think strategically and with an innovation lens on how to protect our healthcare system and data to create more trust in the system. So these are just some examples of how we are really keeping innovation at the center of the work I'm currently doing. And what are some highlights of the work and, you know, what could I do without? I love everything I do, and what I could not do without, I don't think I have anything specifically to say. I think it's just all of them are grateful opportunities for us to make an impact collectively.
No, thank you for that. One of the things you're making a significant impact in is in the world of nutrition. What are we missing when we don't prioritize nutrition in medicine or include it among the other drivers of innovation in healthcare?
Great question, Jay. And, you know, we've heard of the phrase, you are what you eat. And I'm going to add that we are also what we think. And that, you know, improves it, that implements in the policies and the thoughts we have about how we really approach nutrition and health and wellness as an ecosystem. So when it comes to nutrition, you know, nutrition via food and mental health hygiene is critical to living a high quality life. Historically, we've had a disconnect where physicians are not trained in food and nutrition, but given the food insecurity crisis globally, we now have American Medical Association introducing nutrition as a course to physicians. We've also realized food RX as a moment. In my role as a board for the World Food Bank, we focus heavily on educating farmers and eliminating hunger. But in my role at LA County as a nutrition policy advisor, we also focus on how can we lift and shift 2 million Los Angelenos from food insecurity and nutrition insecurity through education, extending SNAP, and creating programs that help physicians look at the entire ecosystem of a patient to further guide them to a nutritionist, a farm box, RX, and other utilities that could address their social determinants of health. So preventive care takes business away from healthcare, is what we all think. But as my friend, Dr. David Katz, mentions that by shifting from a disease to healthcare is much more important, and creating a financial model that supports that is very critical for us to change our mindsets and really change healthcare longitudinally. So my strong and humble opinion, I think it's not just a smart thing to do, but a moral imperative that we focus on wellness than just on healthcare.
It's interesting you tied so many different factors of healthcare, from the financial component to just the mindset that we approach healthcare, towards the framework of connecting food and nutrition. With so many drivers in place, what would you pick as possibly the one or two most imperative drivers in really aligning food, nutrition, and clinical medicine?
I think one of the clear drivers is to think that the food is extremely foundational, right? It's such a foundational block. And so if you start really looking at a person and the entire ecosystem, I think really changing policies to improve economic empowerment, to really change the living conditions of a person, I think really changes how we, you know, address healthcare at a significant value chain effect, right? So if we can really prevent people from coming to the hospitals, I think that's the greatest thing we can do. And that's really the connecting dots. I think the more focus, as every other hospital system right now is doing, is investing in SDOH, is the more we do that, I think the more we empower our society and we really address people in a proactive care and we create a more health and wellness ecosystem than just addressing disease care as a more reactive standpoint.
That's a great point. Looking really at healthcare more expansively than what has traditionally been seen in the past. And in many ways, you reflect that in your activities. You consult, you write, and you lead. Each requires unique skill sets to meet different needs. How do you align your skills with the current needs of the problems you may face? Because in many ways, tackling those problems the right way is in and of itself a problem. So how do you address those?
I know that is true. Wearing many hats is a blessing and a curse sometimes, but thank you. I think, you know, I truly enjoy all the activities I do. If not, I don't think I would be doing them. And I think I found this perfect intersection of this Venn diagram where there's a space for logic, there's a space with creativity, and there's a space with social impact, which is healthcare transformation and public health service. And I strongly believe each skill supports each space and acts as a connector to help me be more expansive and knowledgeable about the industry. For example, I have a background in robotics, public health, and I'm a raw vegan chef. They're all well-connected dots that help me help patient experience, help me elevate food equity strategies. So I think it's really important that we all create a bucket of skill sets and create this grab-and-go strategies for issues we intend to solve. So that's really how I perceive how I approach the different spaces and how I can really leverage each skill to come into play for different issues I'm trying to solve.
It's interesting you mentioned that because I saw when you were at Carnegie Mellon, you had training in robotics. Can you give an example in which that applied to a current healthcare problem, be it just the mindset to approach the problem, or was there a more practical and applicable means of implementing some of your training in robotics into healthcare today?
Absolutely. Because, you know, one of the main reasons I did pick robotics is because I was more interested in understanding the human-computer interaction and understanding the psychology behind what really happens when a person is using technology, right? And so if I have to now move that 14 years into where I'm right now, which is health tech, you know, we're doing telehealth, we're doing digital innovations, we are doing robotics, AI, robotic surgeries, which is all great because it brings us closer, it brings care faster to us, but it also helps us create technology and deliver technology in a way where we remember that the end user is human and we don't have to lose that human touch. So anytime we are in conversations with clients or coming up with solutions or any work I'm involved in, my first thought is really the experience of the end user, which is patients and our members. And really, what is the takeaway and longitudinal impact of that going to be? So I think that's really the connecting dots between robotics and healthcare at this point.
I like the phrase end user experience and using that as the central focus. So let's take a typical consulting engagement or any of those projects that you may be involved in that require so many disparate parts and so many different personalities. How do you decide what role to take on, what to pass by? What's the internal calculator you're using to make these decisions?
Great question. I think I believe in doing some of intuitive decision making and really taking up things that align to my values and impact I would like to make, such as food equity, equitable healthcare system, and just wellness in general. And I call it the art of deploying work and sharing work. And I think we all have to, you know, create this network of collaboration with leaders and fellow colleagues who believe in the same values and who are willing to make the same impact. So I'm happy to always, you know, cascade work I believe I don't have time for. I believe someone else is better at doing. So that's really how I approach it. But most of the time, I think, you know, I feel like there's an impact and can make a significant difference. My answer most of the time is a big yes. And that's really how I kind of go about decision making, what to pass and what to keep.
I like that. Default to yes.
Yeah, that's you know, that has some issues. Sometimes goes to sleepless nights and weekend works, but you know, it's all for the higher good is what I would put it as.
That's well said. So you have a very successful podcast, the Health Forward podcast. It's featured a who's who of healthcare thought leaders, celebrities. How do you select which guests to bring on, and what sort of conversations and topics you want to steer these guests toward?
Yeah, thank you for your kindness. It is a passion hobby and I truly enjoy it. As you know, I love meeting people, hearing their stories, and really sharing their voices to ultimately create a change in the healthcare ecosystem. So to me, the podcast is not just a podcast as a platform. It really is a moment where I'm collecting these voices and hopefully this will lead to, you know, program changes, policy changes, and really create some mind shift changes in within a healthcare ecosystem. So I'm looking at the entire health and wellness ecosystem, and so bringing in leaders and change makers who are working or potentially driven to make impact, and most importantly, are able to influence others to do the same. And I'm not sure I would call it a filtering process, and I'm very immensely grateful for all the guests and all the people that are interested to share their voice to create change for really the higher good. So anyone is welcome, and if I say no, it's mostly because I'm on a time crunch, but most of the guests are welcome, and I think I have some incredible leaders and artists who have really shared the challenges and the empathy they bring, and really the powerhouse of, you know, people I've met who have driven, you know, healthcare and made some significant changes in, you know, even at a global scale. So I'm really immensely grateful to share the space with them.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed, particularly in the way you carry the conversations, is that you value empathy. I think it gives you a certain experience. And I saw that in this MedCity News article, and I'll put the link in the bottom of the where the podcast website is. But it states, again, virtual reality and holograms address patients dying alone in future medical crises, and in which you talk about loneliness, which really became a an epidemic really during the pandemic, although it was always present in some way, shape, or form in our society. But you talk about the role technology can play in addressing this very human experience. Talk a little bit about how you try to piece those together, particularly when you're dealing with healthcare issues, where you're always looking at technology, you're looking at a humanistic aspect to say a particular specific emotion and tying those together.
Thank you, Jay. You're touching a point which is very close to my heart, personally and professionally, which is empathy. And I think I call myself the, you know, I call it the empathy-centric model, whether it's technology or social work we do. I think it's very critical to practice empathy as an individual, as a muscle, so we still feel very connected to ourselves and to other people, and think about every action and consequences it has, whether it's work or personal as well, right? So in terms of your question and the piece I wrote about the virtual reality and holograms, you know, technology is a blessing and a curse, as we all recognize. The pros really are it can bring us closer, such as telehealth and VR, and it can really accelerate the speed of care and the quality of care, because meeting patients proactively at their homes is how we can create more wellness. But on the flip side of the coin, if we lose human touch and perhaps the empathy we really seek from that one-on-one interaction, and as Mr. Mick Tripathi from ONC mentioned, the focus should be on creating a physical and digital combination. He calls it the phygital, which is how we do not separate technology and human experience, but really wrap technology around the human touch. And we're getting a lot of it right in terms of data integration, interoperability, automating process, and so much more. And I think what we may need work with is improving digital access, such as broadband, making health information more understandable for our, you know, layman people, and working with empathy more so now than ever. With all these innovations and, you know, telehealth and working virtually from home, we're really kind of moving away from, you know, human to human interaction. And obviously now we're going to space, thanks to Elon Musk, that it's kind of feels like we're a little more disconnected from what really brings us together. And I think, you know, human connection, empathy should really be at the core of our existence personally and professionally. And so it's just so the piece was really an inspiration about the pain that people are going through and going through COVID and dying alone, but really not having their loved ones around them, especially in the last moment, because even for the family members, for them to live with that feeling for the rest of their lives is is just an incredible amount of pain. And that is why we really have to think about technology and innovations with a big scope of empathy lens.
I like that. And I especially like the phrase empathy-centric care models. I think that's something we need to really start exploring. One of the problems in healthcare is that we get trapped in this cycle of buzzwords where we state one thing, we state empathy, but then implementing that or creating a way where that can be actionable within the system of healthcare is another thing altogether. What are some inroads you've seen or you are specifically leading that include empathy as a driver of real day-to-day healthcare experiences?
You know, great question. And you're right. We have a lot of buzzwords floating around, and thanks to our marketing and, you know, social media strategy, which I think is great for definitely brand awareness and just raising awareness of different issues we're facing as a society. And when it comes to empathy and any other buzzword that even includes equity, inclusion, and everything else, and, you know, practicing it can be hard, implementing it can be hard. And it's not just a process and a program that we just all go into our boardroom and we make a decision and then, you know, off into execution. I think the real work is changing our mindsets. And until we are individually and collectively making a decision to do that on an everyday basis, I think it's just hard, right? So I think it is more of an individual imperative than an organization policy or program we have to drive. For example, we have equity and inclusion in most of our strategies now, but then I talk about the sense of belonging. If, you know, if you bring in people from diverse backgrounds and diverse cultures, but if they don't feel a sense of belonging, then I think the whole concept of equity and inclusion has not really been successful. So I think that's really, you know, goes back to my point of the mindset shift and the experience we need to focus on as a human. And I think that's really the radius of our decisions and the execution we need to focus on.
Yeah, I think two key points that you've emphasized that I think are extremely important is the experience and empathy angles of healthcare. And if we were to apply those two principles and then look at the broad picture, what sort of trends are you seeing? And in that vein, how do you see those two points of experience and empathy included in those overall trends?
You know, great question. I see a shift more towards wellness and addressing social determinants of health. Mm-hmm. Now addressing healthcare outside of the hospitals and investing in proactive care. We're also trying and addressing health problems with food RX, music RX, movement as medicine, and I enjoy that we're really empowering our society to take healthcare in their own hands, right? Some major trends is the major shift to value-based care and the several mergers and acquisitions that's taking place to provide high quality care at the right time in the right place. So pressing problems in the future, some of them I see right now are climate change, mental health crisis, student loans, our increasingly aging population. All these are existent crises that is on the rise and that have some significant impact on our health and well-being. And, you know, so for us to collectively address that within our healthcare system and also outside on the products we buy, on the cars we drive, you know, everything becomes very interconnected. So, and I strongly, you know, make the statement that healthcare is not an independent island. We are now very much in intersection with retail, automobile, you know, wellness products. So it's really this, you know, major ecosystem, and we have different players in the ecosystem that drive health and well-being.
It's interesting you mentioned that because so many of these trends talk about expanding healthcare. And I have an almost unfair question, but I would really love your perspective on this. If we talk about inclusion in these various facets of healthcare that are not traditionally assumed to be part of healthcare, at what point do we expand too much? Or is that not right way of thinking about it? And what I mean by that is, healthcare inevitably will expand as we include other facets and promote inclusion. Is there a limit to that expansion?
You know, I don't believe there with the word expansion itself, I don't believe there should be a limit, right? That's just a personal belief. I think it should just be limitless and boundaryless in terms of health and how inclusive we want to be, because every player in the industry, in this society, has a say on the health that needs to be delivered to them, how it needs to be delivered to them, and at what cost and what quality they would like to receive that. And so I firmly believe that in this expansive model, I think every player has to have their card on the table, every player has a say. And I think that's the only way we can really create a healthcare ecosystem that is really honest, genuine, and efficient, and you know, does just by every player in the society. So I'm all for everyone having a say and joining the club.
No, I agree, and well said. So tell us about you personally. What's next for you? And what are the next 5 to 10 years like in terms of your career trajectory?
Great question. Other than I am a healthcare strategist doing a podcast, I love marketing, I'm a single dog mom, I live in Los Angeles, and I love traveling as well. I've done 45 countries, so I try to do four to five countries every year. And I obviously love public health and doing service in the US and India, mostly in the food equity space. So that's a little bit about me. I completely enjoy exactly where I am now. I'm very grateful. And anywhere there's an opportunity to make an impact and make a difference, my answer always 99.9% would be yes. And I hope, you know, you would find me in that space. So to answer your question, 5 to 10 years, I think the space would just be the same space. Whether it's an impact, there's an opportunity to make a difference. I'd love to meet, you know, people like you and other players in the field who are trying to do it collectively.
I like that. And I want to leave with one quick question. For those who may be interested in getting a hold of you or looking for collaboration opportunities, what's the best way somebody can get a hold of you?
I'm very active on LinkedIn and I respond to messages just as much as you and I have met. And that's the best professional platform to reach out to me. And I would most definitely respond within 24 hours.
Perfect. Simi, thank you so much for your time. It was great hearing from you and we wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you. I'm really grateful for this opportunity.